Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, you are very welcome to The Tonight Show. The majority of new family homes in a Dublin estate are snapped up by an investment fund, despite government efforts to prevent it from happening. According to the Business Post, 85% of the houses up for sale in Belcamp Manor in North Dublin were bought up by a single fund and are now available to rent for over €3,000 a month. We look at the growing dominance of investment funds buying homes in Ireland and what it could mean for rents and house prices. And we ask in this context, how is Sinn Féin possibly going to achieve a €300,000 average price in the capital? And the US Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, calls the charge of genocide labelled against Israel over Gaza a distraction. Well, it's another blow to potential home buyers as news emerges that the majority of new family homes put up for sale at a housing estate in Dublin were snapped up by a single property fund. The Business Post is reporting that 46 new homes advertised for sale in Belcamp Manor in Dublin 17 were purchased by a fund last month and are now being advertised to rent for over €3,100 per month. It comes despite government measures brought in only 3 years ago to protect home buyers. Well, with me to discuss this in studio, I'm joined by Fianna Fáil Senator Mary Fitzgerald and their housing spokesperson, and Sinn Féin TD Louise O'Reilly. You're both very welcome to the programme. Mary Fitz, an issue similar to this blew up a number of years ago. A number of houses to be brought in a new estate in Maynooth, and a vulture fund, cuckoo fund, investment fund, call it what you may, were going to come in and buy them. And there was an angry reaction from those who wanted to potentially purchase these homes. At that time, the government introduced measures to try and, I suppose, disincentivise these investment funds for coming in. And one of their measures was to place a 10% stamp duty on investment funds if they wanted to buy, you know, these houses in bulk. It hasn't been a disincentive though, has it?
No. So it's Mary Fitzpatrick, and thanks for having
me
on the show. No problem.
Apologies.
But it's, your name is important. It's a really important issue. Really important issue for homeowners and for home buyers, for those people who want to buy their first home. The article that was in the Sunday Business Post, I know, went up, then came down, and I thought actually the journalist would be here tonight because there are a lot of questions around this story. The thought that any investment fund would come in and snap up homes that were built and intended for first-time buyers is a real serious concern, not just to government, but also obviously to anybody who wants to buy their home.
Now, just to be clear, Mary, there is nothing preventing an investment fund coming in and buying bulk like this if they pay the 10% stamp duty. There's nothing to prevent them from doing that.
There is actually. We did two things. The government did two things when this issue emerged back in 2021. They acted very swiftly and introduced two strong measures. One was, you correctly stated, the stamp duty increase. They increased stamp duty tenfold from 1% to 10%. That's a disincentive. And that would apply to any bulk purchasing of homes. The second, and this is a really important intervention, it was a planning change. And we changed the planning laws so that local authorities at a local level, local authorities could reserve and require that any new developments being granted planning permission would have a requirement to have an owner-occupier, a minimum 50% owner-occupier. And the other change that we've made under this government is that we've increased the Part 5, the 10% social housing allocation, to 20%. So now there's 10%, minimum 10% social housing, minimum 10% affordable housing. And then on top of that, the owner-occupier ban. But that only applies to any planning permissions granted after that law was changed in 2021. Yeah,
but just to be clear, Mary Fitzpatrick, mm-hmm. just to be clear, what you've said there is the local authorities could
and they
decide.
Have. Of the 31,000 planning permissions granted, this is the only example anybody can show me of new planning permissions since that law was introduced that there's been a bulk purchase.
OK, let's see what Leo Varadkar had to say when he was asked about this today.
There isn't just a punitive tax, the 10% stamp duty which you mentioned. It's also possible for local authorities to make it a condition in the planning permission that when a new estate or a new development is being built, that it can't be sold in bulk. So there are those two measures that exist in the law already, and we'll have to take a look at this particular case and see what happened in this particular case and whether or not we need to do more in this area.
Louise, you called this a slap in the face for would-be homeowners today.
Because it is. Because, you know, people who are struggling to buy a home for themselves at the moment, really, I mean, can you imagine how disheartening that would be for somebody to hear that? And to hear my own colleague, Piers Doherty, obtain figures from the Department of Finance that up to March 2023, over €20 million in stamp duty had been paid. So these funds are continuing to bulk purchase. So whatever
way... OK, Mary Fitzpatrick is nodding her head there and saying, no, there's not, they've brought in measures.
And indeed, but you can't argue with the facts. So the facts are that €20 million has been paid in stamp duty by these funds. Vulture funds, Cuckoo funds, call them what you like. I call them people who are competing with an unfair advantage against young people trying to buy a home. So the facts really speak to the fact that the government haven't addressed this issue. They should address it. But as recently as the last budget, they voted against a Sinn Féin proposal to increase this tax to 17%. There needs to be a real disincentive. There isn't a disincentive because massive profits can be made. You see that? €3,100 in rent per month for these homes.
I think it's actually €3,175 per month, to be clear.
So the people who are going to be paying absolutely exorbitant rents for these homes, because they're desperate for homes. Let's be honest, people are absolutely desperate because of this housing crisis. So the people who are going to be paying that €3,175 should be in those homes. They should own those homes. They should be their forever homes. And they're not. Instead, they will rent. They will pay absolutely exorbitant rates. And these vulture funds are laughing all the way to the bank because they won't pay a penny in tax on the rent that they collect.
OK, Mary Fitzpatrick.
Look, Sinn Féin play with figures all the time. In this instance, Piers Doherty is referring to stamp duty that was paid on properties that were granted planning permission prior to the laws changing. Since the laws have changed and since local authorities have the powers to reserve for owner-occupiers, That is not happening. But more importantly,
can you guarantee that, Mary Fitzpatrick? Because can you guarantee that all local authorities, when they're granting planning permission for estates like this, for new homes, potential homes for families out there, that they put in that condition that they won't?
Local authorities are independent bodies, so no national politician could guarantee what any local authority is going to do. And local authorities act in the best interests of their local area. They understand.
Okay,
this is an important point.
This is an important point. Why did the government, when this blew up a couple of years ago, why did they just not move to stop this happening altogether?
How? Like, but what they've done is they have actively disincentivised it, and they've given they've given the powers to the local authorities to reserve for owner-occupiers where there's an actual need. But most importantly, what the government has done is they've massively intervened in the market to deliver housing at scale. €4.5 billion a year now is being spent by the state to deliver increased housing supply. And this is something Sinn Féin won't do. They won't help first-time buyers actually buy their own home. They'll talk about the price of a home, they'll talk about reduce, but they won't talk about how they'll actually financially support first-time buyers. In fact, what Sinn Féin will do is actually take help and supports that are there, the 30,000 help to buy for people to get a deposit.
We want to talk about investment funds. We want to talk about this particular case.
This is actually affecting people who are trying to buy their own home.
But so is this.
But the reason we're talking about this investment fund is because they've bought homes that first-time buyers should have been able to buy. for first-time buyers to be able to buy a home, they have to be able to afford a home. To do that, the government is supporting them with a 30,000 tax deposit towards their own home, but also the first home shared equity scheme. And Sinn Féin have not explained, they have not explained how they will help first-time buyers. In fact, they do nothing for first-time buyers. They have nothing to offer them.
Okay, so the facts are that in the period up to March 2023, less than 2 years, okay, so less than 2 years, we're talking about very, very, very recent times, not history, very recent times.
But when were the planning permissions granted?
Please don't interrupt me, Mary, I didn't interrupt you.
But could okay? I think it's important to answer that question.
21 million euros was collected.
So can you answer that question, by any,
so I,
were the planning permissions before or after the new changes?
So I'm fairly confident that planning permissions that were granted after the changes were made also will do this. 10% is not a disincentive. It did not act as a disincentive to this fund. It didn't act as a disincentive to the funds that bought 630 homes, homes that should have young families in them, homes that people should be starting their lives in. And, you know, I mean, Mary can talk about supports for home for first-time buyers, but what the truth is, in Dublin, you have to have an income of €127,000 to be able to afford the average home. House prices have gone out of control.
Discussion out a bit. I want to bring in economist Piers Daly, who has researched the rise of institutional landlords specifically in Dublin. Just very briefly, Piers, what is an institutional landlord?
So it's quite a broad group. We commonly hear them referred to as cuckoo funds or investment funds, but actually you have anything from a long-term investor like an insurance company or pension fund to say a real estate investment fund to then say more speculative or short-term investors like a private equity firm. But the thing they generally all have in common is most of this is foreign investment. It's not generally domestic Irish capital that's going via these funds into housing.
They used to, am I right, invest in commercial property in Ireland, but that has changed. They are now targeting the private residential markets.
Yeah, that's correct. And particularly since 2018, we've seen a big increase in the amount of investment that is coming from these funds into the housing market. Actually, you'll see here, this is quite clear from the graphic that you're being shown. It's increased a lot since 2018. And as part of that, we've seen this big increase in investment in new units as well. But there's quite a few complexities here that actually mean the extent to which they're maybe adding to supply isn't as extensive as you might think. But I can come back to that later.
Yeah.
What's important about these figures overall is they reflect what has become basically in Dublin. These funds now accounting for 1 in 10 residential property transactions. That in some area codes, maybe up to 40 to 50% the number of units that households are buying. So it really demonstrates they're active, they're investing on a large scale. And then that's in turn reflected in their increasing share of the private rental sector in Dublin, which has increased from about 6% in 2016 to about 17%. So they're big players, and it leads to questions about the extent to which they could impact or lead to added upward pressure on prices and rents.
And just to be clear, I suppose the big attraction here, probably the reason we've seen that increase from 6% to 17% is because they can get such great returns here in Dublin. The rents are so high.
Yeah, indeed. And that comes back to your point about the shift from commercial real estate more generally, because simply the yields are higher in the residential market than they are in some segments of the commercial market.
And we have, when we've discussed this before on the programme, we've been told that we need these investment funds to come into the country, that they are very important, not only, you know, because we need them as professional landlords, but that they help to build supply. Is there evidence that they do this?
So my research, I look at a specific subsegment of what say industry commonly referred to as institutional capital. So there is an element of institutional capital which goes into our home builders. That does help build supply. However, what I look at is institutional investors who are buying housing rather than developing it in a sense. And you can see here this total figure of 16,872 units that they bought invested in between 2018 and 2021. And if you exclude three key elements, so secondhand units that they bought or new units that have been invested in by publicly or say, we'll call it state-backed investors. So these are investors that are backed by the government's Irish Strategic Investment Fund. So if we exclude those, secondhand purchases and purchases of new units from home builders that they bought off home builders, it effectively leaves us with this 6,733 figure at the bottom. And that's roughly about 40% of their total purchases over this period. So really it suggests that actually the extent of the extent to which they're maybe adding to new supply is more limited than we might actually expect.
Okay, and that only brings us up to 2021. Do we have any sense of their activity in the market over the last 2 years?
So I would expect it's continued to shift towards new units. It's not possible to be definitive about some of that because obviously I haven't compiled the statistics for those 2 years. But I would expect it's primarily new units. But again, with that, I would expect that some of this is being acquired from home builders. Potentially, then again, there could be an increasing share coming from these state-backed investment funds as well, which seem to be providing new supply in contrast to the other, what I refer to as kind of fully privately funded funds.
Okay, let me just put that back.
To be supporting supply.
To Mary Fitzpatrick, that is surely alarming, isn't it? Mm. 16,872 units acquired. No huge evidence that they are coming in, as we've been told time and time again, and actually building, adding to the supply when they are in operation in this country.
Yep, Pearce's study was very worrying. And I suppose in part that led to, let's say, the response that Housing for All has brought about. Because what Pearce's study looked at was the period 2011 to 2021. And obviously since 2021, we've introduced Housing for All. That Housing for All brings about a massive state-led intervention to increase housing supply. So €4.5 billion euros a year being, you know, spent on actually building new housing supply and 300,000 homes to be built over the lifetime of the plan. It's really important because what it means is that there isn't just the private sector, because that's all there was building. Now the state is building as well through local authorities, through approved housing bodies, the Land Development Agency. You saw before Christmas, very significant increased funding to the Land Development Agency to deliver an additional 10,000 homes. You'll see Respond, one of the approved housing bodies, they announced an additional 2,900 homes in Dublin just before Christmas. And they're all affordable homes. And with the Land Development Agency, the big change we made as well was we ensured that it would actually use all the state-owned land to deliver social and affordable homes.
Okay,
that's
Louise,
a big change that wasn't in place under the previous two governments.
Okay, so Louise, they saw the issues and they've addressed them, is essentially what Mary is saying.
Okay, so let's look at a really basic measure. Right? Let's take it down to the absolute basics. By any measure, a government who say, and this government do, though with less and less credibility as every day goes past, that they that this is, you know, they are focused on housing, absolute number one priority. And yet we see the number of people, just a really basic measure, the number of people in emergency accommodation has risen to 13,500. That's the number of homeless people. So the number of people, families, 4,000 children that do not have anywhere secure to live is rising under this government. That is a fact.
Okay, just to go back to the issue of institutional investment funds. Mary is saying the government saw the issue here and they have addressed it.
But they clearly haven't, because there's a story in the paper today that shows that the measure that they have introduced didn't work. So they were warned that their measure wouldn't work. They were warned by Pearse Doherty time and time again for years. And let's bear in mind, by the way, no action was taken by the government until that housing development in Maynooth. There was a furore in the press. And as a knee-jerk reaction to that, they brought in the increased stamp duty. But that hasn't.
Barely in place 6 months.
That hasn't.
Was barely in place.
That hasn't worked.
No,
Mary, again, you interrupt me. I'm going to ask you not to do that, please. So we see by every measure, the government is failing to address the housing crisis that they have created. And the institutional investors, let's be clear, right? These people don't build anything. They do
That's not strictly true, actually. They bring in, I think, 40% of the funding brought into the country is being used for new builds.
What they do is what we're talking about are funds that bulk purchase houses that have already been built, houses that should have houses and apartments. Of course, apartments are exempt because the government don't think an apartment is a home, but houses and apartments homes for people, where families should be putting down roots, where they should be settling.
Do you
they're
think
paying €3,175 in rent.
Okay. But
they
should, at the very least,
they should have taken on board the suggestion that Sinn Féin made to increase the stamp duty.
I want to speak to Mary now.
There's a number of false assertions that can't go unchecked.
Okay, no, but false assertions. I want to ask you,
as long as I'm allowed to correct the false assertions.
Yeah, I just want to look at the issue there of apartments, because the measures brought in by the government didn't include apartments, did they? And the evidence is that these funds are not coming in and just building apartments. They are coming in and they are bulk buying apartments that have been built by builders in Ireland and depriving ordinary Irish people from buying them.
OK, so the false, the false assertions I have to deal with first. Because they're really misleading for your viewers. I will answer your question about the apartments. I'm happy to answer it. But the false assertions, I mean, anybody who is homeless, emergency accommodation has been provided and more people have exited homeless than are in homeless accommodation. The 46 homes, that story was put up and taken down. We want it clarified. But there's been 100,000 home transactions, homes purchased, and Sinn Féin are focusing on 46. And now they're saying they want to further increase the taxes.
OK, just to be clear, Sunday Business Post are standing by...
That's fine, they're not here tonight to defend it. Anyway, to answer your question about the apartments, there is a significant issue around the viability of building apartments. That's well recognised. The government recognises it in Housing for All. That's why we've brought forward very significant subventions to make the building of owner-occupier apartments viable and a reality for people.
OK, but we're not talking about the building here. I'm talking about these funds coming in and buying bulk apartments that have been built by home builders in Ireland.
But where they do that and where they provide it on a long-term sustainable rental basis?
Where's the evidence that it's a long-term sustainable rental basis? Where's the evidence of
that? Well, the evidence is that the laws and the protections for renters have increased renters' protections. We've increased the terms of leases, the protections around deposits, the protections around notice periods. We've introduced the renters' tax credit.
Okay. And on top of that,
most importantly, the biggest intervention is the introduction of the affordable cost rental. And where these ethical funds, where these sustainable funds will actually provide rental accommodation on a long-term basis at 25% below the market rate, they can avail of the state funding to provide affordable cost rental.
Louise,
affordable cost rental never existed prior to this government.
And how many exist at the minute?
The delivery for the LDA is 10,000.
OK, so how many people are living in affordable cost rental homes at the moment?
You know yourself, Louise, it takes 5 years from start to finish to build new units. And you also know yourself, Louise, that we're coming out of a decade of undersupply. And Sinn Féin doesn't have a magic wand. Sinn Féin wouldn't have been able to deliver any more affordable cost rental.
OK, Sinn Féin would at least have charged 17% stamp duty.
If there was a Sinn Féin government in place, is the chaos that there would be. There would be no homes for people to rent. They have no plan.
Mary, let's let Louise back in.
OK, you talk about chaos. How dare you? I mean, how chaotic do you think it is to have to put all your possessions into several plastic bags and a few suitcases and live in a hotel? 4,000 children. And you brush that figure aside, Mary.
No, I don't actually, Louise.
You did.
I didn't.
You just did there now.
I didn't.
Okay,
I mentioned it actually, Louise. I mentioned how serious an issue it is.
I did.
And I think it is disgraceful.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Sinn Féin try to pretend and exploit.
Okay, Mary, I find your government's policies disgraceful. I find the issue of 4,000 homeless children absolutely disgraceful. And I find 4,000 homeless children does not represent progress. And the Nekia to say that it does.
16,000 have exited homeless. 4,000 homeless children. And 100,000 homeless children.
Ladies, we're going to have to take a break, if that's all right. We are going to return to this topic after the break, because Sinn Féin suggested that lower Dublin house prices would be on the agenda if they got into government. 300,000 was the figure they put forward. But how would they achieve them? We debate this after the break. Last month, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald caused a stir when she announced that the average price for a house in Dublin should fall to the €300,000 mark. Her comments were dismissed by Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, who said the move would result in huge numbers of people falling into negative equity. However, in a recent poll by Ireland Thinks and the Irish Independent, 69% of respondents said that the move of reducing the average house price to €300,000 would be desirable, with just 20% of those polled opposing it. The poll suggests an appetite for such a move, but how would it happen? I'm rejoined by my panellists, Senator Mary Fitzpatrick and TD Louise O'Reilly. So, Louise, you seem to have the backing of the public for this. How are you going to get there?
Well, I think we need to look at where we are and what the current situation is for any person who wants to buy a house. So if you live in Dublin, you have to be earning €127,000 to afford an average house.
An average new house.
An average new house. No, absolutely, absolutely. And the, you know, not a second-hand house. No, because where the government makes an intervention, house price has gone up by 10%. Where they didn't, 1%. So look, we can see that. But I think the key here is looking at affordability, because it is not affordable for young people or for people. And this is a cohort that very often get forgotten about. But people who are over 55, who are coming to retirement.
Okay, we know all of this, Louise. I want to know how you're going to achieve it.
They are living in rented accommodation and precarious accommodation. And they don't know how they're going to be able to afford to pay for their rent and how they're going to have any kind of security. They should be in affordable or cost rental homes, and they're not. Okay, so what we want to do is massively increase the supply. We think the government's targets are, they're not hitting their targets for social and affordable homes as it is. Their targets are wholly inadequate. But we want to see an increase in supply and a gradual reduction in the cost of a home for new purchasers in new build homes.
Okay, but the government under Housing for All also wants to increase supply, and supply is increasing slowly, but it is increasing. So what level of supply would Sinn Féin bring, let's say, if you get into government next year and the year after? What's your targets?
So we want to see a minimum of 30,000 homes, obviously, from the private sector, and then 10,000 social and affordable homes to be delivered, actually delivered. And I think that's very, very important. And then you need to build on that over time. We want to see greater use of new construction methods, because that's something where we believe really serious delivery can be given. And we also want to see, the average
cost. OK, so you're talking about 40,000, let's say, for the year you come into government, maybe a bit more the year after. How long do you think before you would get that the house prices in Dublin, in the capital, are currently averaging at about 430,000? How long before you'd get them down to 300,000?
I think over the course of the a term in government, it would be reasonable to expect that the costs will come down, because obviously you will see greater supply. But I suppose the question I want to ask the government is, are you happy? Are you content that young people...
We just want to focus on this policy, because it's a big figure. It's got public support.
And so I just want €30,000 on average to buy a house in Dublin at the moment. What is the government's answer?
Over the course of a term of government for Sinn Féin, you think you can bring down house prices from 430,000 on average to 300,000?
We believe that house prices have to come down, because people simply cannot afford.
Do you believe with your policies you can bring them down?
But at the moment, people can't afford. So, like, the choice is a very basic one, right?
Okay.
We either raise the average income to €127,000 a year, or we ensure that house prices come down. There isn't any alternative there.
Okay, Mary Fitzpatrick, do you agree with this general concept? We need to bring down house prices in Dublin and across Ireland.
We believe that house pricing needs to be much more affordable. I think what we can all believe now is that Sinn Féin have no plan to deliver it. I think that's become abundantly clear. We're already doing it under Housing for All. Like, you have to look at what Housing for All has already done for the people that Louise describes, who are trapped renting in insecure accommodation, paying high rents. We're already doing it. The first home shared equity scheme.
Okay, let's I want to talk about house prices here. Do you agree with the idea of bringing down 300,000?
The average house price that has been purchased under the first home shared equity scheme was 370,000. The average equity given was 70,000, bringing the house price down to 300,000. And that's before...
It's bridging the gap.
You're correct. Yeah. You are both correct. Yeah, I misspoke there. It is bridging the gap to make it affordable. But that's before you apply the Help to Buy deposit, which is a 30,000 tax refund for first-time buyers. Now, let's just be clear about this. We've been clear with the public how we are going to make housing more affordable, how we are making housing more affordable. Sinn Féin need to do the same. Sinn Féin need to say, what are they going to replace the Help to Buy 30,000 tax refund for first-time buyers with? What are they going to replace the first home shared equity that is bridging the gap between a house price and what people can borrow? And what are they going to replace the Land Development Agency with, which is funded to the tune of 6 billion public funds to deliver 10,000 social and affordable homes,
okay,
100% social and affordable
just very quickly,
on state-owned lands.
This idea that there is public support out there for this radical, quite a radical move that would
to make housing more affordable.
And for people to potentially, you know, accept that there would be negative equity in their own homes.
I don't think people
were asked, would you be willing to take a reduction in the value of your own home, potentially putting yourself into a position of negative equity to bring house prices down? And I think about 62%
people said yes, actually. So that would have much broader consequences, obviously, for those homeowners, for all homeowners, for the lending institutions, for our banks. There'd be much wider implications. And if that's what Sinn Féin is proposing, and that's what I heard Mary Lou say, she's saying she's going to devalue everybody's home, she's going to bring it down to the value of 300,000 euros. If that's what Sinn Féin are proposing to do, they need to spell it out.
Okay,
because these are serious economic calls that they're making. And
do you accept that there seems to be a public appetite for this?
There is huge public appetite for more affordable housing. That's why we've committed 20 billion euros to actually increase the delivery of social and affordable homes to purchase and to rent.
All right, Louise O'Reilly, you haven't laid out a plan.
Our schemes are actually in place. 40,000 first-time home buyers got the Help to Buy. 7,500 have registered for the first home shared equity scheme. Okay. Both of those schemes, okay, Sinn Féin will scrap.
Okay, but I suppose what Sinn Féin are saying is you shouldn't.
They don't have an alternative.
You shouldn't need those schemes. You should be looking to bring house prices down for greater supply. Louise, respond to
that. Okay, so since this government came into office, the average cost of housing has gone up. It's about 90,000 euros.
Okay, in fairness, I don't think the government are responsible for all of that.
I'm not suggesting that, but I am simply saying that government policy is leading to...
seriously going to suggest house prices. Policy is to drive house prices.
Again, Mary, you keep interrupting me. I didn't interrupt you.
Yeah, okay, let Louise respond here.
So government policy, what it does is it fuels demand. It does nothing, very little for supply. So we know they're missing their targets and we know they're missing their targets by miles, okay?
They're missing specific social and affordable targets.
We've exceeded the targets every year.
These are what the government control directly, okay? So they control directly social and affordable homes for working people to rent and buy, and they don't build them, okay? That's why they miss their targets. They set targets that are woefully inadequate and they miss those targets. So by every measure, house prices are going up on average.
Okay, there's just I just want to make a point.
When Mary talks about affordability, and she talks about the importance of affordability, okay, and accepts that currently house prices are not affordable for young people or for those over 55 that we were talking about, they're not currently affordable.
Just very quickly, Louise, because they don't have a lot of time here, the Housing Commission had a report last year. They said we need between 42,000 and 62,000 houses a year up until 2050. Yes. But you're telling me 40,000.
So and we need to build on
building.
That. No, we
and
need
actually
to,
they'd be buying. The increased housing that Sinn Féin said they'd supply this year, they would buy.
We need to build on that. I mean, bearing in mind, by the way, the next election will be, I believe, will be fought on the issue of housing, because it is absolutely key. There are far too many families with grown adult children in their childhood bedrooms waiting to start their lives. Those people want to see their kids be able to afford a house, as do I,
to
as
the point
do many
that Mary made,
others.
There's been 40,000 plus first home buyers in the country.
OK, so many of those people didn't need the help, the money that was okay. given to them. They had a deposit in place. They had a mortgage.
We both agree that affordability is the issue and supply is the issue. The only thing is we have a plan. They don't
Your
have
plan
a plan.
Is, right,
we have a plan that's actually delivering.
Made.
That's building
Your plan
more
is
homes than have been built in a decade.
There for now. Ladies, sorry to cut across you, but we're going to have to leave that there for now. I fear it is something we're going to have to return to again on this programme. But let's turn to another story that is dominating the headlines this evening. 14 people have been found hidden in a trailer at Rosslare Europort in Wexford. The group of 9 males, 3 females and 2 children were discovered yesterday morning at 3 a.m. Well, let's go to Wexford now for more on this. We're joined by Park Byrne from the Western People. So, first of all, tell me how these individuals were discovered.
Well, I suppose the alarm was initially raised at around 1 a.m. on Monday morning. A call actually came from within this refrigerated container that was on board the ferry bound for Rosslare Europort. So essentially, the UK authorities were informed that there was 14 people within this container. It must have been a horrific situation. They were starting to find it hard to breathe, and they were short on breath. So that sparked a major response. Naturally enough, the UK authorities got in touch with the Irish authorities, who got in touch with the crew on board the ship, and a search began to find the container that they were trapped inside. The people were eventually freed, and then when they arrived into Rosslare Europort at around 3 a.m. There was a major multi-agency response within Rosslare Europort. Gardaí took over the terminal building down there. Several units from the National Ambulance Service were on hand to carry out assessments of the people. Thankfully, it seems that everybody was in good health and tragedy had been averted. So at that point, the authorities, Gardaí, took the people who are mostly Kurdish nationals, I believe, maybe one or two Vietnamese. They were taken to a processing centre in City West, where they will undergo some questioning and their documents, etc., will be checked.
All right. OK, look, we'll leave that story there for now. But Padraig Byrne, thank you for bringing me the latest, and we'll bring you any other breaking news on our bulletins down in DM in the morning. Now, we're going to leave that discussion there for now after the break. The US Secretary of State calls the charge of genocide made against Israel in Gaza meritless and a distraction. Very welcome back. Well, the US Secretary of State has labelled the charge of genocide made against Israel a distraction. Speaking at a press conference in Tel Aviv, Anthony Blinken said the charge made by South Africa to the International Criminal Court lacked merit, but said the daily toll on civilians in Gaza was far too high.
We believe the submission against Israel to the International Court of Justice distracts the world from all of these important efforts. And moreover, the charge of genocide is meritless. We know that facing an enemy that embeds itself among civilians, who hides in and fires from schools, from hospitals, makes this incredibly challenging. But the daily toll on civilians in Gaza, particularly on children, is far too high.
Well, for more on this, we're joined via Skype by military analyst Sean Bell. Sean, you are very welcome to the programme. So we heard what Anthony Blinken thinks of this case taken by South Africa. What do you think? What do you think the even provisional findings of the ICC are going to be?
Good evening, Kira. Well, one of the reasons that this case has been brought is, if you look at the hard statistics, after that fateful day on the 7th of October, when Hamas killed 1,200 Israelis and took 240 hostages. In the 3 months since, the Israelis have managed to kill 23,000 Palestinians. There's 54,000 that have been injured, allegedly two-thirds of those children. But that represents about 1% of the 2.3 million people in Gaza. Now, one of the things, you know, ruthlessly, you have to look at what the charge of genocide means. It means destroying a whole nation, a whole group of people. Now, whilst Hamas is hiding the civilian population, what Blinken and Prime Minister Netanyahu would claim is that Israel has given a warning to the population to move south away from the mass of the bombing in the north. It's also issued maps out which give regions and timings for when attacks will happen. And they've also declared it as a war of national survival, which tends to blur the lines a little bit more legally between combatants and civilians. I think the international community is growing concerned, as is the US, with the number of civilian casualties. But it was pretty clear Blinken was dismissing this cry of genocide and doesn't see much merit through the International Criminal Court.
He also said that he'd spoken with Benjamin Netanyahu and that the Prime Minister made it clear to him that he doesn't want to push Palestinian people out of Gaza. He's not looking for resettlement. But he's also made it clear that he doesn't really believe in the two-state solution at present. So what is his plan? Did he get any clarity on that?
Well, Keira, I think that that's exactly the number of the point here, is that the US has provided almost unreserved backing for Israel. But the political end state, the understanding from the US, the UK and probably much the international community was that a two-state solution was the only viable route. Well, near the end of last year, Prime Minister Netanyahu and his team made clear that that was not what they were seeking. And the danger is, if you look objectively, the way they're working through Gaza, it's very difficult to see that anything other than potentially pursuing a one-state solution. And that will make life very, very difficult for the US to support them. Also, if you look at they're placating the US by saying we're going to reduce casualties, we're at the beginning of the end, was one of the Israeli quotes later on in the last week. But the harsh reality is, having finished their operation in the north, they're gradually moving, the Israelis are moving their operations to the center and then the south, squeezing the population further south, but they're not allowing the population to return to the north. That is increasing the population density in the south, which is exactly where the military operations are intended to focus, trying to root out Yahya Sinwar down in Khan Yunis. So it's very difficult to see how this tactic is going to actually reduce civilian casualties, but obviously it remains to be seen.
I mean, you mentioned there the pressure that the United States are obviously feeling at the moment. This is his fourth visit to the region. What did he actually achieve this time?
Well, part of the reason he seemed to be visiting was to try to stop a regional escalation. As you say, it's very unusual for a US Secretary of State to do four visits in 3 months. And a whistle-top tour almost looked like a firefighting tour around the Middle East, desperately trying to placate concerns. But the harsh reality is it is escalating. You know, there are attacks increasing on US forces in Iraq and Syria, to the north of Israel, the border with Hezbollah. Lebanon, Hezbollah is fighting more in a more animated manner. And of course, in the Red Sea, the Houthi rebels are causing a great deal of difficulty with international shipping. And there's increasingly this sort of sense that the US is becoming a bit isolated in their support for Israel, because there's just increasing concern about what is the political end state that Israel is trying to seek. And of course, 8 decades of friction in the region, what has been absolutely clear is military action does not solve the root causes. And yet, at some stage, the two sides have to find a way of mutually coexisting, and that will probably involve the international community. But military action is simply making matters worse. It's not solving the problem.
Right. Sean Bell, thank you for bringing us that insight. And Mary, why hasn't Ireland decided to join South Africa and some other nations in bringing this action to the ICC?
I suppose when you listen to military experts talk like that, it's really dehumanising, isn't it? And Ireland has put all of its pressure and focus and energy into trying to achieve a ceasefire, an immediate and permanent ceasefire, access for humanitarian aid, release of the hostages. And then you get to a further, I suppose, independent investigations and underlining all of that is a permanent commitment to a two-state solution. But it seems like we're so far from that.
But surely an action like this would heap further pressure, perhaps not in Israel, because there's absolutely no evidence that they would take any heed of it, but it would heap further pressure on the US. So why would Ireland not join that action?
Well, I think the government's position on it is to put all of its energies into a permanent and immediate ceasefire, release of the hostages, and you know, unrestricted humanitarian aid.
Do you believe this is genocide?
It is atrocious what is happening there. It is absolutely... He defined genocide in a certain way. I'm not a lawyer or a military expert, and I'm certainly not an expert in the International Courts of Justice, but it's criminal, absolutely. Of course it is. It's inhumane and it's barbaric, and it has to stop. It just has to stop.
Yeah.
We need a ceasefire, and we need release of the hostages, and we need unrestricted humanitarian aid. This is such a failure of humanity.
Okay, and I accept all of that. Let's just go back to this particular action that South Africa is bringing and that the ICC are going to begin hearings of, I think, in the next week or so. Anthony Blinken there saying, look, it's meritless, it's not going to succeed, it's a distraction, and yet you're calling, Sinn Féin's calling, for the Irish government to join the action.
Absolutely. We're only calling on the government, by the way, to do what they did in relation to Russia. We believe there is equally as compelling a case. And in fact, the figures are multiples in terms of casualties. I mean, we're talking about 10,000 dead children, 23,000 dead civilians. So,
I'm not being cold or callous, but just to be clear, you feel that that comes within the strict definition of what genocide is?
Well, that's for the ICC to determine, but we do believe, yes, that this is what... this is the forced displacement of 2 million people, the cutting off of water, the denial of food. This is an absolutely horrific and disgusting aggressive action against civilians.
And what do you think it would achieve?
Well, we're hopeful that the government will change and will do simply what they did previously in the case of Russia. That's all that we're asking. There should be no hierarchy. Genocide is genocide, and it doesn't matter who it is that is the victim or who it is that is the aggressor. But I think what we need to see is the government pulling every lever, and we don't see that yet.
We're going to have to leave that there for now. Mary Fitzpatrick and really thank you both for coming in to me. Our programme is available as a podcast on all major platforms, and you can also now find us on Instagram and TikTok tonight, VFTV. From all the late team here, good night. Take care. See you tomorrow.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.